The WLEW, News and Public Affairs Department, now presents What Do You Think? Here's your host, Craig Routson, with today's topic.
Good morning. Our guest today in the studio, Joe Bixler. He's the MSU Extension District Coordinator for five counties here in the Thumb area. They just got through with the fair and all the other stuff. I know 4-H is heavily involved in the Extension office locally, and now you can take a little breather, at least for Huron County. I'm sure every county has their own time frame, and you're dealing with it.
Yeah. Well, Sanilac is coming up next week. It starts the 20th, and that's the last fair of the season in our district, so...
Yeehaw!
They seem to be moving them up further. It used to be a harvest thing, but I guess with school and everything else, and the summer tourists, it's much better to get them where you get more.
Yeah, jobs. The first one was the third week in July in St. Clair, and then the following week, Lapeer and Tuscola had theirs. Huron's was last week, and Sanilac is next week.
It just seems like, you know, but when you get that early, people are going to have to, like, greenhouse start some of these projects because they just won't ripen in time.
You think?
I mean, when they're due to ripen in August and September, it's kind of hard to have them in July.
Yeah, well, you're showing green tomatoes, not red tomatoes or whatever.
Well, it made a good movie, so it's fine.
Exactly.
One of the things you wanted to talk about today is dairy. Dairy is a big industry in the area. We have the big plant that sucks it up in Cass City and such. So, I mean, it's been around. It's been around since it was a small thing that every farm's had a little bit of dairy in their own, just for their own needs and such. But dairy nowadays is a big business on all aspects, from the farm to the processors to the marketers. And I would guess... at this point, the first on the chain is probably the one getting the biggest hit.
Well, sure. It's where the raw product comes from. I mean...
But everything comes from this. It all spreads out. Cheese, butter, milk,
yogurt. Frozen custard. You can tell that I eat a lot of that. I'm a dairy guy. Yeah, it does. And we can just talk about milk for a second, but that's the raw product.
And there's different grades of milk.
Absolutely.
There's the grade A that goes to basically what you get in the store in a bottle of milk. Mm-hmm. Other grades can go into butter or other types of products that have different standards and different needs for the fat content and such.
Exactly. And I'm not here to talk about that. I'm here to talk about the economics of dairy. But you're right.
And dairy farmers for years, they've told me that they're struggling. I mean, the prices are difficult to make a profit on,
right?
Because their overhead keeps going up. They have to buy new equipment. They have to keep increasing the herd to make it, you know, get more revenue coming in, and then that means there's more expenses. It's just like a revolving circle of
inputs and outputs. Actually, and this is a general statement relative to agriculture, but in 2014. I think I have this date right. That was the heyday, so to speak, for profitability in agriculture in general. And ever since then, it's been going downhill.
Is it because we're just becoming too efficient?
I mean,
every year it seems like we start finding areas where we're breaking record crop numbers and such, and you know, it seems to me that just can't keep going on and on and on, because you can only really get so much off an acre and so much out of a cow without them screaming bloody murder.
Exactly. Just milking them three times a day. No, and I could talk about the efficiency of agriculture and precision agriculture for 45 minutes alone, but let's just focus on the dairy piece. So right now, you can buy a gallon of milk for $1.09 in some places. Back in June, I bought a gallon of milk for 79 cents at Aldi's, down Thumb. And those are loss leaders for those companies. I mean, they're just bringing people in so they buy other stuff. However, they're not paying any more than probably a buck a gallon, so if they're losing 11, 12, 20 cents on a gallon, that's nothing for them, as long as you pick up, you know, a slushy and hamburger and...
Or a bottled water for $1.20.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, they bring it in. So, and Kroger's, for example, they sell all Michigan milk. They've been selling all Michigan milk for 50 years, and you know they have an exclusive contract, and that's nice. And their current price is $1.09. They haven't moved from $1.09 for 6 weeks.
Is that one of the pieces in the puzzle, though? Only Michigan milk. It used to be. This was something that had to be chilled, and it was, you know, we truck it across country now, but it in the past more of a local product? You got your dairy locally,
right.
And Ohio got their dairy locally, and California their dairy locally, because to ship it around the country to processing plants just didn't make sense back then.
No, it doesn't.
But today it does. We've got the Cass City plant that condenses it down into a less... They take the water out of it, so it can be rehydrated elsewhere.
Right. Well, you know, and Kroger's is down in Livonia's. The plant down in Livonia is producing all the milk for their stores, and they probably produce for other stores as well. But the brand name Kroger milk, you know, they have their label, and then there are other labels that are selling that milk too, Michigan milk. But so the $1.09 is, you know, a loss leader, and yet it costs on average about $1.75 to produce a gallon of milk on the farm. So
we're not even counting the middlemen getting it there.
No. And in fact, I told you this story earlier before we came in the studio. We've experienced in Michigan 7 suicides amongst farmers in Michigan since January of this year. Some of those are dairy farmers. And they're experiencing some significant financial stresses.
They have an overhead, and you just can't dump it, so to say, because you don't want to use the term dumping milk.
Although that's exactly what they've done. They've literally, the folks that they supply to have called and said, we don't need your milk today. Now that farmer has milk three times a day. Let's say they got 300 head. They've milked those 300 head three times, and their supplier calls and says, we don't need your milk. They literally open up the stainless steel tank and dump it on the ground. And that's $1.75 a gallon going right on the ground, literally. I mean, they've put the inputs in, and they've gotten the outputs, and they're not getting anything for it. So, would you like to work for free, Craig?
So this, you know, one of the problems is that, you know, you are tied to a single source to take your milk. You contract with them, and you can't say, hey, he's not going to pick it up today. Do you want it? I mean, this isn't something that you can just roll around with.
No.
And go with the flow. You are tied to your people who come and pick up your milk, and that's pretty much that.
Yeah, exactly. And
you've got
a
contract for so many years. You can change maybe after it's done if you're not satisfied or you're getting too much of this.
Right.
But in the end, it isn't like you can take your business elsewhere.
Mm-mm. No, you can't. So, you know, and even if you could, at this point, we're in a prolonged downturn in terms of the milk prices. I mean, they sometimes last for 6 to 8 weeks. I mean, you see the cycles, but this has been 14 to 16 weeks now. And so, you know, it's very prolonged, and there's all kinds of things feeding into it. It's prices for grain. You got to feed the cows. You got to water the cows in order to get the output. So,
and you may be able to send them off into the field in the summer, but you've got to have stored hay and
exactly
alfalfa and everything else just to get them through the winter, so
exactly.
They can keep going. And nowadays, it's a science on how you feed them.
Always has been, yeah.
But I mean, it's more or less, you know, they've got it down to a science, and that's not cheap either.
No, you know how much water they have to have, you know how much grain they have to have, or silage.
Roughage till it goes through.
Exactly. So,
because the biggest expense, I think, would be a stuffed up cow.
Exactly. So, you know, so the economics of this is pretty simple. I mean, all you have to take is $1.75 of what it costs to produce it. And if Kroger's is selling it for $1.09, you know they're not buying it for $1.09. They might be buying it for $1.10 or $1.20, but they can afford to lose the money because they're just bringing folks into the store to buy other stuff.
It's the stuff they put at the end of the aisles that
you
go further.
Those
down
Hostess cupcakes and M&Ms and all those stupid magazines that have stupid stories on them.
Well, folks, we're done. We're going to the grocery store.
You know, the bottom line is that you know, the producers of the raw product are getting the shaft, and particularly the smaller dairies. I mean, the larger dairies have a bit of an advantage because they're doing volume, and so.
But that hurts the smaller ones because
well, sure.
there's all this capacity out there that's
sure.
raising how much is in the market area.
Right, but there, you know, there's a spirit de corps among dairy farmers all across the thumb. I mean, nobody wants to see anyone hurting. And again, I'll bring up the issue of 7 suicides in Michigan since January. Nobody wants to see that either. And it's so much so that MSU Extension has been responding to that issue in a hopefully a proactive way by training folks who work with farmers, including finance people and other suppliers and vendors, to know what the signs of depression are and how to maybe respond to somebody that might be a bit despondent or not on top of their game. And then we're also directly taking some of those educational pieces directly to farmers too. I mean, you know, mental health is a serious issue across the country for the general population. Because we work with ag and agribusinesses, we're a bit more sensitive and closer to the producers. And when we see this as an issue, that's, I mean, 7 suicides in farming, is that's a lot. And it may have changed since I've last heard that number. So we're responding. We have to. And we're not counselors. We're not mental health therapists. We're just folks who provide educational opportunities so that people can see what the symptoms are and maybe attend to their friend or their neighbor or coworker or a fellow farmer and say, you know, I noticed you haven't been, I haven't seen you at the breakfast table over at Sam's restaurant for the last 2 weeks. You all right? I mean, just those kinds of things. So
when you see something that's not typical.
Exactly. Exactly.
A little flag here and there.
Well, and everyone knows when you get into financial stress, then, you know, marriages have a tendency to be stressed, and there's issues, relationship issues there. Kids might start having problems. So the schools might recognize behaviors in kids who are coming from the farm.
And small farmers have usually an additional stress. You just don't walk up to the bank and say, I'm going to start a farm, a dairy farm. It's usually inherited.
Yeah.
It's a family thing that's gone back
yeah.
to maybe generations. And yeah. you're looking to feel like I'm the one who lost it for all my ancestors here. And that's another additional pressure that people put on themselves.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I got to tell a personal story here.
Okay.
Do we have time?
Go for it.
Well, okay, so
depends on how long it is.
Yeah, well, back in May, I was actually here in Bad Axe, and I was driving home to Port Huron, and I was taking the back way, and I was probably within 15 miles of home, and my wife called and said, pick up a gallon of milk. But that's always happened to all kinds of people, me, you, everybody. Except, well, I don't think men call women to ask them to pick up a gallon of milk. I think it's usually the opposite. But anyway, I said, I don't want to go out of my way to Kroger's or, you know, some big store to buy it. I'll just stop at a convenience store right around the corner from my house, and I'll pick up a gallon. Well, I stopped at a place in Port Huron, and they wanted $4.59 for a gallon of milk. Well, I told them what they could do with their milk.
You could buy a gallon of gas and then some.
Exactly.
They have to drill for that. They have to process it. It's flammable. It's hazardous stuff. And
unbelievable.
Yeah. Okay.
So, you know, it did not settle well with me at all. That was on a Friday. On Sunday, it was about 4:30 in the afternoon, and I was just totally miserable all weekend. And I looked at my wife and I said, I'm going up to Aldi's to buy milk. She said, why the heck are you driving all the way to the north end of Port Huron to drive to get milk? I said, I'm buying 20 gallons of milk and I'm going to go give it away. Because the store that I tried to buy the milk from is in a neighborhood where all the public housing is in Port Huron.
Transportation.
They typically don't. And if they pay a 75 cents both ways to get to Kroger's to buy $1.09 gallon of milk, may not be too feasible. And so, therefore, that's why they end up paying $4.59 for a gallon of milk. It's ridiculous. Somebody's getting taken advantage of. So I picked the milk up, and parked near the store that I tried to buy milk and gave it away. And since then, a group of us have given away almost 400 gallons of milk since May. So we found a need. And in addition to just giving away milk, we're also promoting the virtues of milk or dairy products. And so we've entered into relationships with MMPA and the United Dairy Industry of Michigan to do educational programming through extension. Mm-hmm. And then the our nonprofit group that I'm affiliated with in Port Huron are passing out brochures and pamphlets on why milk is good food. I see your poster up here of the Got Milk poster. That was one of the advertisements a while ago. I can't even remember who this gal's name is, but she's an actress. I don't know who she is.
Yeah, well, we had like the Hulk or something too in that.
So yeah, the Hulk. Yeah. Last. Yeah, well, yeah, she's prettier than the Hulk. Anyway, so we're promoting the virtues of dairy being a good source of protein and full of nutrients that kids need, and frankly, all of us need. When you get to be an adult, you need less of it, and you might go down to 2%, but we're buying whole milk.
But some people get lactose intolerant.
Yes, that's true. Not very many, but yes, that's true.
Because the enzyme that you need to break it down,
you don't have.
You have as a child,
right.
Isn't there anymore. But you use it in other things. You little bits in cheese, little bits in your macaroni and cheese, all this kind of stuff.
All of it, yeah. Yogurt, ice cream, frozen custard, cheese, butter. Hello. I mean, it's all there for the picking. So we're doing the educational piece, and we also are trying to take milk off the market because it's a supply and demand issue. The supply is going down. The supply is up, and the demand is down. So if we took 400 gallons of milk off of the out of the market that typically wouldn't have been taken out of the market. And so, you know, you think, well, that 400 gallons is nothing. You're right. But beginning in October of this year, we're going to be taking 1,000 gallons a month off the market and distributing
processed gallons.
Yes. So along with fresh produce and non-perishables. So but that's another subject that I'll have to come up and talk about another time. For 45 minutes. Anyway, so that's the milk. That's my milk story. And I've been able
to. People should know that, you know, we were talking earlier about the farmers dumping their milk. You just can't take that milk, put it in a bottle, and go. There's a lot of health regulations, a lot of stipulations, pasteurization equipment that would have to be done, testing to make sure that it's safe. It's not as simple as, you know, having an apple farm and just putting a stand out in front of your house.
Right.
This takes certain processing to meet standards for safety.
Well, you have to, before the milk even gets put in the truck, it has to be tested.
Because they don't want to contaminate a bigger batch down the road.
They've already picked up milk from someone else's farm, and they don't want to mix it with someone's milk that might be contaminated with antibiotics or whatever. See, a lot of folks think that, you know, the issues with regards to growth hormones and the use of cows as well as antibiotics is a major issue. It's not. Never has been. You cannot put the product into the food chain if there are antibiotics present in the product at delivery. You can't. But cows have to be treated a lot like human beings. When they get sick, we give them antibiotics. And when they get better, we take them off. It's just like what we do with ourselves.
And there's a certain period you have to sequester that milk for the antibiotics to pull out of their system. I mean, they know this. This is the farming industry. This is the science behind it.
Processes, procedures, regulations, blah, 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 blah. And I don't really, that's the technical side from a production point of view, and that's not my expertise. In fact, my expertise isn't even in economics, but I've gotten so close to it that I understand it. You know, my role in Extension is an administrator for the five thumb counties. I work with county administrators, county commissioners, and 57 staff to produce, you know, a quality educational program of our four major institutes. And we use the local dollars to balance our three-legged stool, if you will, financially, from state, federal, and local sources. So
I thought you were talking about a little milk stool.
No, milk stool, yeah. Uh-huh.
Remember those days?
Yeah, that's a long time ago. That's too far. There might be a few out there doing it, but not very many.
They're milking their goats.
Exactly, yeah. And the stools have gotten smaller as a result of that. So in addition to that administrative role, I get a chance to interact with a lot of different people, from kids in 4-H to dairy farmers to planning officials with regards to wind and solar. We could talk about that forever. And so I'm not even a jack of all trades and master of none. I'm just somebody that knows a little bit about a lot of things, and just enough to come on your show and talk for 45 minutes about stuff. If you ask me any technical questions, I'm going to refer you to one of our experts in our offices, because they are the experts. I'm not.
They're the people the farmers turn to.
Exactly. They don't call me. They don't call Bixler and say, hey, I'm paying $1.75. I need more.
Is part of the supply problem imports?
No, not at all.
Are we generally just using our own milk
yeah.
in this country?
Because yeah, but there are.
We've always heard, you know, and yeah. we had that whole thing with China and the melamine in it years ago. I mean, then it was like they were poisoning their own kids with it. We didn't want any of that here. But we're basically self-sufficient as far as our needs, and we export.
Well, yeah, we export, yes. I was just about ready to say that. So, and there are more opportunities that are presenting themselves that our wonderful policymakers in Lansing and Washington are talking about, particularly Washington. But, you know, there's a logjam right now in Washington in terms of what the administration may want to see policy-wise versus what's already in place in terms of relationships with, you know, folks overseas, including Cuba. You know, Cuba is a new market, or at least it was. I don't know what the status is today, but...
But they can't have a lot of cows out there.
No! But there's a population that needs milk. I mean, if you look at the nutrient values of milk alone, we're shipping milk to Flint right now to help mitigate the lead water poisoning effects in kids in Flint. Because milk is a it has certain nutrients, and calcium has certain nutrients that help mitigate those effects of lead poisoning. So MMPA has made a heck of a commitment to kids in Flint to bring milk to them on a regular basis. I don't know how many thousands of gallons that we've given over there, but it's a significant impact. So, you know, when the old ad said milk, well, it's right up here. Well, maybe it's not. Milk is good food? Yeah, it is. It's a good food, and it also has nutrient values that promote you know, healthy bones and healthy teeth and all that stuff. And, gee, they mitigate lead poisoning in kids. So, you know, milk's got some great qualities.
Have we lost a lot of the markets we used to have? I mean, when I was a kid, you went to school, there was a milk machine. You didn't have pop. You didn't have any. There's a water fountain if you wanted it. Nobody was using it.
Exactly. I mean, they don't use it today.
I mean, there's... You know, today they have other things in the schools that they can drink, juices and other things. Are we teaching our next generation not about the good values of it? Because we've had it as kids, and it just seemed natural to, well, you're having dinner, pour yourself a glass of milk.
Yeah, we're moving back, actually. I think it's swinging back a bit. In fact, there's evidence of this through... are professional athletes who are using chocolate milk to refresh their bodies after they work out.
See, my folks would have never gotten chocolate milk.
That's yeah, exactly. Good for you, well, right? You know, no. But, you know, obviously they're drinking chocolate milk for other reasons. They probably need some of that, the benefits of the chocolate, too. But
it's sweeter in it.
Yeah, right. But when you have literally the mascot for the Detroit Lions, Rory, who's promoting, you know, the Play 60 program through the NFL, they're actually using milk as part of their promotion. And also Andre Drummond from the Pistons. I think I'll be able to get Sparty to come over at some point and drink a gallon of milk and maybe put a milk mustache on Sparty at some kind of an event. So, you know, I really think it's turning.
Because there are options. You have
there's all kinds of options today.
The flavored milk, you have reduced fat, low fat, 2%. I mean, if you want to get some of the fat out of the milk and just the nutrient benefits, it's as easy as walking down the aisle and finding the right one.
Yeah. Yellow cap, blue cap, pink cap, red cap. through our giveaway program, we buy all whole milk. Because when the price is the same, why not? I mean, there's a bit more of a fat content.
Well, it's also better if you're baking and doing other things.
Oh, yeah.
To have the full content, because some of the recipes tell you don't use the lower fat because you need it to make it stick together.
Yeah. Well, that brings up stories about my mom's recipes that she still hasn't written down. You know, a lot of our moms just stand at the stove and just make those meals, and they taste great. My favorite one that my mom used to make still does, hamburger gravy over mashed potatoes. And she makes it the same way every time, and it tastes the same way every time. Now, I could stand right next to her and have a separate pot on a separate burner and do exactly what she does, and it doesn't taste the same, including the milk that she puts in there. So, hello, Mom, write it down. We need it before you go. All you moms out there and dads.
I think that goes back to being a kid, though. When Mom made the sandwich, it tasted better, too.
Oh, my. Even peanut butter and jelly. Yeah, exactly. So,
but we're getting more back to preparing foods at home as well, too.
We
do eat out a lot, a lot more than he did in my age. But we didn't have all the fast food places in my age. I think McDonald's was just starting up.
Right.
And you didn't even eat there. You took it home.
Right. Well, you know, you were old, and so am I.
Well,
there's that.
We don't need to go there either.
In fact, the McDonald's that I remember seeing, the first McDonald's I ever saw built in Port Huron has been refurbished like four times. So, you know, it's like every. And I remember the sign originally back in the early 70s saying, you know, over a billion served. Well, it's more than a billion now. It's hundreds of billions of hamburgers all over the world. But anyway, and they serve milk, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
And they're putting milk now in their Happy Meals. So,
lot of these places use real butter.
Yes.
I mean, there's the synthetic whipped up stuff from oils and stuff. But
right.
they tend to use the real stuff, even in the little packets they give you
yes.
to go with your meal.
Well, I insist on them. Personally, I'm not gonna take it's just like butter. No, it's not. Not for me, it's not. I'll take the real butter, and I'll take the salted butter because it tastes just a little bit better than unsalted for me. But again, there's recipes that call for unsalted butter. So now you're getting into our food nutrition education programming and extension, and how you not only teach the benefits of all the nutrients and foods that are available to you, but how to cook them, and how to cook them economically, and how to shop economically, how to make good choices at the grocery store that are good for your family and for you without spending $1 million. I mean, you know, the days of going in and spending 50, 60 bucks on groceries for the week for a family of four, way over. Way over.
You get two little plastic bags.
Exactly. There's 50. Thank you. I need, that's $49.95, please. Here's your nickel back from your $50 bill. So, even folks who have the wherewithal to buy whatever they need and want at a grocery store are making different choices today. And there are some folks who have decided that they're going to eat organically. Well, that's great. It's an alternative. I can't afford it. I haven't seen much difference between organic and...
But around here, if you want it organic, you can grow it yourself.
You can do that anywhere. You can do it in the city of Detroit. They are. Of course, you got some heavy metals in the ground that you might want to have to mitigate, but
let me go back to the lead problem.
Yeah, there you go. But I mean, I have raised beds in my backyard in Port Huron, and... that's urban farming. I mean, it's not urban farming, but it's my little garden.
But when I was a kid, and I know the people on the farm today still do this stuff, but even in the city, my folks canned, and they stuff for the winter, and it kept you over.
Craig, that's all
Christmas, you'd go into the pantry, and here's some stuff we had fresh in the summer, and here
it's all coming back. It's all coming back. We have food safety experts. In fact, a gal here in Huron County, Lori Messing, is a health and nutrition, she's an educator that teaches food safety, particularly to the commercial area, restaurant businesses and volunteers who are running soup kitchens and food pantries and having potlucks. But she, you don't want to eat in front of her. Yeah, she's real critical about, Well, are you going to finish that, or are you going to put it in the refrigerator? And when are you going to put it in the refrigerator? And if you put it in the refrigerator, how many days are you going to let it sit? I don't need to ask all these questions, but she's a food
covered.
Yes, she's a food safety expert. And then we have other staff who are teaching the canning, and they test pressure cookers and all that kind of stuff. So, and that's all we're seeing, all of that coming back, not in droves, but little by little we're seeing. Kids, I mean, they're kids to me anymore, as young as 25, 26, 27, who are taking our classes. Or they're looking them up online on our website to find out how you do X, Y, and Z. And you've seen more, I've seen more ball jar kits in grocery stores, right? And the end caps, where you see all that stuff that, you know, you probably shouldn't buy, like M&Ms and Twinkies and stuff. There's just piles now of you know, quart jars and lids and rings and all that kind of stuff. So,
and freezing, there are freezer containers.
Ah, yeah.
And there are certain things that you can simply freeze. You prepare them. You know, you have to blanch them so they don't you know, don't lose their color and their nutrients.
Right.
But then you put them in the freezer and then you take them out. And they don't last quite as long as the jarred stuff, but
right,
you'll have them through much of the winter. And then
right,
you go to the jarred stuff.
Well, and you've already grown it, and you've already processed it, and you can skip that aisle or two in the grocery store. I mean, you just walk right past it, you know? You don't need it anymore. We're also extending our reach with our 4-H kids with regards to food safety and food production. We've got kids that are raising protein for food pantries and food banks. Chickens. Chickens only take about 6-8 weeks to develop.
Well, yeah, you leave them any longer, you gotta roast them.
Exactly. Exactly. So, we now have kids who are raising large livestock and small livestock and for food banks. And also, we have some buyers at auctions at our fairs who are buying the animal, the kids get the money, and then they donate the animal back to a food bank. They don't want the meat. They just want to help the kid out. Well, that's great. And then they take the meat and donate it to a food bank. And it has to be processed through a USDA facility in order to enter the food chain in that fashion. But so we're doing some things to help folks who are food insecure in the thumb. And it promotes the benefits of not only doing community service for our 4-H kids, but the science of raising those animals comes into play, as it always does with our kids. And frankly, you know, a 12, 13, 14-year-old becomes somewhat of an expert at. We got a kid out here in near Cass City who raises honey. She's an FFA kid and a 4-H kid, and her and her buddy started a bee, a maple syrup business. Mm-hmm. They're doing well, and they're specializing. So they're putting the maple syrup in special jars. And they're also making some candies and stuff. And their price points are pretty darn good. So there's an entrepreneurial piece to all of this, too. So the introduction of the sciences, community service, and making a living, if you have to, off of food is being introduced to our kids.
Well, I don't know if it's still going. I know a year or two ago I had heard that there was like a vegetable stand over by the MSU office that the kids at the tech center had built for a time, and there were people who could donate their extra from their garden.
Still doing it? I think so. I haven't been to the office this week yet, but I think it's still there. I'm not positive.
But these are the types of things that MSU tries to
promote.
See what works. If it can help people in the community that can use it and are getting nutrient-rich foods and not processed and
right,
and all the life and color have been drained out of them.
Exactly. Well, that's what our job is. Extension's responsibility as the land grant, as the unit of the College of Ag and Natural Resources, and as the land grant university in the state of Michigan, is to take the research that is produced at the land grant level, and it doesn't have to be just MSU. It could be MSU and Mississippi State. Could be Cornell, could be UC Berkeley, wherever the research is done.
It won't be U of M.
we do some work with U of M. They run the Sea Grant education program, and so there are staff, but the money from NOAA goes right to U of M for that research, and we hire the staff that work with coastal communities on, we've got a lot of coastal water here in Huron County and in the Thumb. So yeah, we work with U of M. We actually work with Ohio State. Ohio State's the land grant in Ohio. Just thought I'd mention that. And I've got good friends and colleagues.
You will not be able to wear that Michigan State shirt that you have here if you say that too much in this county.
I know that. And you know, when it comes to football and basketball, I am true green and white. However, the universities across the country produce research that can be used in communities, and that's our responsibility, is to take the research that has been proven. We're the biggest laboratory that the university faculty could have. And they come out and do their little, not little, their big projects, whether it's in agriculture or social-emotional health or food systems or whatever. And then when they prove their point relative to the research, it becomes documented and we start using it. If it doesn't work, we don't use it. It's pretty simple.
Well, and it's just, you know, economics. You don't all have to do the same science to prove it's right. Once it's proven, you move on.
Well, exactly.
You take that science and you apply it to the projects that you're looking to do.
Well, and frankly, that's an investment that taxpayers have made into you know, the federal and state level and local level, and that's why you see folks that support extension from a personal point of view, because they actually see the value of our educational programming and the results of research that's been produced at the university level and the land-grant university level that comes down and makes an impact on them and their communities and their families. That's what we're supposed to do. That's what we're charged to do. And we've been doing it for over 100 years now in Huron County. And well, actually over 90.
And it's had to grow and change with the times.
Oh, yeah. We have to be nimble. And believe me, the university is one of the least nimble organizations I've ever worked for. I mean, it's a huge bureaucracy. It just is. I'm not saying that's bad.
Well, most large organizations tend to be a bit conservative because that's you don't take the big risks. You go where you know you should be going.
Right. But you know, a case in point relative to agriculture again, you know, we're working with organic producers like we are, you know, our traditional commodity production, large production producers with GMO seeds. So, you know, people think that we're bipolar. Maybe we are, I don't know. But there's research to be done in both of those areas. In fact, Bob Battle, our ag educator in Huron County, has some field trials in corn and soybeans with organic seeds this year that he's doing field trials with and for. So, you know, we're always experimenting. We're always trying new things, and we're always trying to assist the production side of the industry with our experts in the field with the latest and greatest. So it's, I mean, literally we're doing research out here. I mean, you can't do it all on the campus. There's only so many, that's a 5-square-mile campus at East Lansing. They only have so much property.
Well, and you have to go where the crop grows best, too. We have certain crops in the Thumb that do better than crops near Traverse City and crops
beans. 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 Huron County typically is in the top 10 counties in the country for dry bean production. Top 10. And 4 years ago, we were number one. So, and we might get back to number one someday. But
sometimes you're making that on the backs of less fortunate others who were rained out and such because
possibly
their crops didn't yield
sure. What
yours could.
Sure.
I mean, that's another aspect of farming, is what's good for you may hurt your neighbor who's
absolutely
far down the road. We are getting close to the end of the time here. You said you had a couple of major projects participating in that you wanted to let people know.
Is our time almost up?
Well,
seems like we just started, Greg.
It just seems.
I hustled up here to get here on time, and now it's gone. I'm whining a little. Craig's saying, would you like a little cheese with that wine? Yeah, sure, why not? So there's three major projects in Huron County that are underway. We're about to get underway that we're involved with. The first one I'll talk about is the water project between Port Austin and Bad Axe. They built a water authority about 15 years ago to deliver about 18 million gallons of water a day, and they're pumping out 3.
We had arsenic problems here locally in the wells we were using, so we had to do something, and Senator, at the time, Jim Barsha, started getting the ball rolling in Washington, getting grant funding, and it worked out.
Yeah. Here's the problem. It's an 18 million gallon capacity system, and they're only selling 3. We need to find larger producers who can take up some of that production that we have the capacity for. So working with the EDC and some community partners to identify potential users of large volumes of water. It's not going to be residential. I mean, you only get so much out of flushing a toilet and drinking water.
And we're always working to make that less and less.
Exactly. So you know, there might be large-scale livestock production. There might be one of my personal favorites, a large, you know, brewery might want to come here and brew beer here, Michigan beer. Thought I'd mention that. I mean, there's all kinds of opportunities, and we are trying to bring...
And we can learn to grow the hops here, as we are doing in certain places.
Some places in the thumb we are, and we could grow barley, too. In fact, Spartan barley came back after many, many decades of being latent. Our research facility up in the UP grew Spartan barley and came out pretty well. So, you know, you have hops production, you have barley production, you have malting houses that we're going to need. There's all kinds of opportunities. I mean, you know, in another 2-3 years when I retire, all this stuff's going to come to fruition. And I'm going to sit back and go, I remember that. I had nothing to do with it. But so that's one project. Another project is the decommissioning of the Detroit Edison plant in Harbor Beach. That's going to happen if it hasn't already. And then so they need to figure out what they want to do with that land.
It's a large enclosed port right there.
Exactly. And it could be a deep sea port. I'm just saying. So, then right next door to the decommissioned Edison plant will be Dow Agra's chemical plant, which is large now. It's going to get bigger. And so, and it's going to bring new jobs, and it's going to change the fabric of not only that community, but communities around it, and there'll be value-added opportunities for those new people who are going to be coming in for those jobs. You know, you might have another McDonald's show up, or you might have some coffee houses, or you might have just all, you know, dry cleaners. All that stuff is an opportunity.
Stuff that a small tourist town can't support year-round, without a little larger population.
Exactly. So we're collecting the data points on behalf of the EDC and helping the EDC with community conversations relative to that change that could be coming, that probably is coming. And, you know, we're kind of a neutral third party, because even though our staff live in those communities, we're bringing people from outside to have those conversations so that people can talk about stuff. And then, so those are the three. You got the decommissioning of the Edison plant, the Dow Agra plant in Harbor Beach, and then the water plant in Port Austin, between Port Austin and Bad Axe, that we're participating in. And it all has economic impact, it all has community impact, and it also will have impacts for families and individuals across, you know, across Huron County, and it probably will spread. I'm going to make one more point, and then I know you're going to tell me to shut up.
We're getting a little close.
Close. Okay, so in my 7 years of doing this job, I have found that there's an upper thumb and lower thumb. Upper thumb consists of Huron, Sanilac, and Tuscola, and they don't consider St. Clair and Lapeer as part of the thumb. Oddly enough, Lapeer and St. Clair don't consider themselves part of the thumb either.
The I-69 corridor.
The problem with that is that Macomb, Oakland, and Wayne don't want Lapeer and St. Clair either. So where does that leave Lapeer and St. Clair? Well, they're on the I-69 corridor. And I maintain that at some point in the next 5 years, and I'm saying this right on the radio right now, that within 5 years we're going to have a major food processing and or logistics facility on the I-69 corridor somewhere. And then the commodities that are produced in Huron, Sanilac, and Tuscola will be completely relevant relative to the 5-county thumb area, because we no longer will have to ship our beans from Huron County down to Kentucky so the Bush family can make baked beans. We could do it right on the I-69 corridor. We can boil water and we can pour barbecue sauce on the finished beans. That's all I got.
Well, if people want more information, you've talked about the information on canning and preserving, all the other things that are offered through. There's 4-H if they have kids, how they can get their kids involved in it. You start them at a lower age, and they go right through school, and they end up with projects at the fair, and all this just seems to blossom. They get ideas that agriculture is a lot bigger than just the farm. There's a whole lot of stuff that goes into the farm and comes out of the farm that needs to be dealt with, and it's all agriculture.
Yeah, let's just remember that we've been around for over 90 years plus in Huron County, over 100 years plus around the country, and we're as relevant today as we were 100 years ago. And but food hasn't changed. Well, food's changed a lot, but we still have to eat. And we still have to take some responsibility for feeding the world, and we'll have to continue to do that. So farming's going to change, and we're going to be on the cutting edge in terms of bringing the production practices and safety practices to communities so that we can continue to help the world eat, and as well as help ourselves eat, too. So I'm looking forward to coming back.
And we both look like the
Pillsbury Doughboys right here. So if you need to contact the Extension Office, I would suggest that you look us up on the web, and you can look our county offices up on the web.
And they do have a lot of this information on the web.
Oh, you can
go to the MSU Extension.
And you just search for paperwork
on canning and other things. And if you want to know more, there's experts that you can talk to.
Literally talk to.
That basically can tell you that's what this means.
Yeah, or they'll send you an email back, or they'll text you, or you can send your bugs in and your diseases on your garden plants, and somebody will diagnose them for you right on the spot and send you the information back. I mean, technology is incredible anymore. We've got field educators literally out in ag fields that are beaming stuff to campus, and within 30 minutes they've got a solution to the farmer. I mean, that's incredible stuff.
And we could go on and on about
on and on and on and
tech
on.
Tech for the farmers and the GPS on the field and everything else.
And milk. And milk. Technology for milk. So I really appreciate you allowing me to come, and I'm looking forward to coming back because I could do this for days.
Okay. Well, we've got to run because up next we're going to be having the news. I do want to thank you for being my guest today. Joe Bixler, MSU Extension District Coordinator for the 5 counties in the Thumb area. And if you have questions, contact the MSU office in Bad Axe. Or if you're listening in Sanilac and Tuscola County, you can go to those areas too and check them out. And they will get you the information and the help they need, or they will clue you into who you need to talk to.
Exactly.
Coming up again, we'll check the latest in the news. Do stick with us.